This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dive into the world of video game music brought to you by OCRemix.org.
This week, we wander the soundscape of Seoul with developer Thomas Sharp and composer Nabil Ansari, conclude the big ones with a really big one, and slow down our busy lives to hear a playlist of ambient music. Welcome one and all. My name is Steven.
My name is Brian, and my voice is a little bit shot right now from repeatedly doing my Yoshi impression.
Yoshi!
Welcome to the final full episode of the Overclock Podcast. In case you missed our last announcement that we put out, we finally decided to bring the show to a triumphant halt. But we'll have a final episode after this, don't worry. We're going to have a playlist that's going to, well, play everything out. So for now, we can focus on this episode.
Absolutely, and this episode is a nice and full one. It's taken us a long time to put together, but we're excited because we got a full interview and we've got Matthew here with another segment of the big ones, and it's really all coming together.
He was very excited because he of course knew the show was going to end as well and wanted to do like the biggest big one he could think of to finish everything off with. So he chose Ocarina of Time, which just happened to have a little like mini segment inside of it talking about the ambient music of Ocarina of Time, which kind of fits in with the rest of the episode.
Wow. It's almost as if we planned it. And I don't think
almost as if.
so close.
But anyway, let's get into the rest of the episode.
Yeah, let's kick it off with the Remix Rewind, where we have a ton of music that has come out from OC Remix since last we spoke.
Fredrik combines classic Amiga game Cannon Fodder with classic rock group Dire Straits for a brand new recipe sensibly titled Cannon Straits. It's a delicious Danish of mellow music, thanks to a smooth as butter saxophone spread across layers of crispy, crumbly acoustic guitar.
Hope you saved room for the Ren Fair, because Rebecca E. Tripp has baked up a feast of medieval flavors from The Legend of Zelda. The first look at gold wafts through the air with memories from long ago, woodwinds mingling with harps and hand drums, for a golden aroma that, fair warning, might attract didongos.
Hey, you didn't expect dinner without a show. GCJ has rolled up into the jazz club with a tux, the better half of a fusion band, and a sparkle in his eye one can only acquire from the Little Planet. The Jazzy Cosmos takes the mind-bending insanity of Sonic CD's Japanese ending theme and tones it down to something below disco but above lounge.
Yeah, what?
gotta do something. Believe in yourself. 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 Hey, extraordinary things can happen if you believe in yourself. And you got to have some faith in yourself if you want respect from your friends. Don't need a raise, don't need to chase it like you are. Keep it all the same as you move along.
Speaking of kicking back, welcome to the island. You know, the secret one with monkeys. Rozovian delights us with a tropical reference to a LucasArts classic with Late in the Caribbean, a pineapple sweet remix that'll steal your heart with steel drums. You can't see the sea, but believe me, you can hear it.
On the topic of bodies of water, I guess. Remember Lunar Pool? Well, neither do we, but Harmsing is going to make darn well sure you don't forget it. He's whipped together a medley of themes from this mysterious NES title called Lucer Tool that goes places and doesn't stop until it's seen them all.
Now let's slow down and shine the spotlight on a single instrument and a single game, the piano and Final Fantasy VII, respectively. Blue Lighter transforms Mining Town into a ponderous solo that casts a darkening cloud across the soundscape. The call from the mine will keep you guessing, especially since it seems to have more questions than answers.
Okay, intimate self-reflection time over. The cloud has retreated, and Link is brandishing his sword as the sun rises, side by side with our boy Rotaka. The Champion of Hyrule is a triumphant charge into the heart of The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild, taking its minimalistic soundtrack to new heights of grandeur and melody. Those Dodongos better think twice before eating our Ren Faire food.
He's finally back, performing for you. There's a brand new mix from that Argyle dude. Yep, you guessed already, DK64. It's called Anthropoid Overture. Hear the meter and the tune, the Kirkhope scale. DK Island is back to kick some tail. The woodwinds and strings, fire in spurts. Wear your suit, sir, for this nice concert.
Ah, but where would Donkey Kong be without Mario? Well, definitely in better health. Fortunately, our red-capped pal is too busy touring his old butt-stomping grounds in Super Mario Land to bother anyone, reminiscing over the good old days with an organ or two. Suzuma Baki brings this mental image to song with Welcome to Goombo Probably, whose dedication to fuzzy distortion makes the trip down memory lane all the more trippy.
And speaking of trippy, here's a classic tongue twister for us to trip over. Feastal Procession from Front Mission Gunhazard comes to us courtesy of Gaius Christianus Canarus. Reverberating from a careful collection of bells and bulls with crystal clear tones.
That's the part you messed up.
Crystal clear tones, percussive, precise, and disconcertingly fragile. Thank you.
From the cling of bowls to the tick of clocks, we make our way into Memory Night, AJ Despirito's evening version of a previous Super Paper Mario remix. Quiet as a sundown and circular as a clock face, this melody of gentle forward momentum could be described as, well, timeless, I guess.
Equally timeless are the adventures of Maui Mallard, a tropical detective who is secretly Donald Duck? Or something? Anyway, the point is that Goy Frog has turned this video game adaptation into a feel-good island party called Dance Like Popcorn. So kick back and enjoy these Mallard mallets with production that really pops.
Little did you know, that popcorn is crackling and popping on open flame in the heart of Skyrim, as Rebecca E. Tripp serenades us with Legends Around the Fire. Smoke billows into the shape of Celtic tales old as time, curling with orchestral flair and suddenly leaping with the shouts of warriors under the stars. This ancient display is only one part of a greater medley, and I mean that both literally and metaphorically.
Thank you.
Gario's here with a Ducula X. Wait, sorry, gotta shift gears. Dracula X remix called Burning the Clock Tower. You might also find yourself burning the midnight oil come some fine full moon as you let the vampiric trance of smooth synths carry you into the night.
All of these remixes and more, head over to ocremix.org. Hey everyone, welcome back to the interview section of our podcast. I'm Steven, your regular host. Today we have an old friend here. We have Nabil Ansari, who is part of the OCR crew and otherwise. Hey man, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Steven.
Yeah, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. And definitely a newcomer to the show who we have not talked with before is Thomas Sharp, who's the director at Gossamer Games. Hey, Tom, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much. Honor to be here. I love the work you guys do here.
Thanks. That's very nice of you to say. All right, well, let's jump into this thing. What is Gossamer Games, and what is the game that you guys are working on right now?
Yeah, so Gossamer Games is a brand new independent video game studio based right here in beautiful Philadelphia, PA. And we specialize in creating more empathetic or aesthetic-driven experiences. So think games like Flower or Journey, or anything where it's more taking in the sights and the sounds, and really exploring video games as an empathetic medium. And Soul is our debut game. It's our very first project, and in the game, you play as a tiny ball of light in a world shrouded in darkness. And we drop you in, we don't tell you where to go or what to do, and we just let you explore. And as you explore, you light up everything around you. And once you light something up, it stays lit up the entire game. So it's kind of like you're painting with light.
And Nabil, where do you come in?
I'm the composer and sound designer for Soul. So I've been working with them for the last 3 years, right, Tom? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been going through lots of different iterations of what the music should sound like. And finally, this year, I've arrived at something that I really like and something that resonates with a lot of people. In fact, at the MAGFest Indie Showcase, I actually got second place for best music next to Pixel Noir for first.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Nice job. That's awesome. Well, I have a lot of questions about how that came to be. But first, let's continue with the history lesson. How did you guys get together and start working together on the project?
So a long time ago, back in, I think, sophomore year of college, I was what we were called was a custom design major. So it was a major program where you sort of design your own curriculum. And mine was basically a combination of mathematics and music. And there was one other person in the program who wanted to do very similar stuff. And one of the artists from Gossamer Games who worked for them back then, her name was Jamila. So Jamila contacted my friend and she said she wasn't interested, but she actually referred Jamila to me. So then I met with Jamila and Tom one night at the game studio at Drexel. And we talked about sort of their concept for the game and what they were into. And so things just started to pick up from there. I started submitting little concept tracks, and they really liked the atmosphere that I was building for them. And then for 3 years, I've just been iterating on that.
I've always loved the titles that game company have put out, and just all these artists really experimenting with the medium as something that's more kind of expressive. And so I love those types of games, and I knew that I wanted to try and create something like that of my own. And so I signed up for a program, the Game Art Production Program at Drexel University, which is one of the top-ranked game design production programs in the country, in the United States. So we went through that, and there's a really cool program here called the Entrepreneurial Game Studio, which is specifically made for getting students to go from just working on student projects and working in classes to actually forming startups and taking those games and putting them out commercially. And so we received a little bit of funding, we received office space, resources, all these different things available to us. And that really helped us kind of move from just working on this as a side project to an actual professional production.
How early on did you know you were going to zero in on music as a component?
Yeah, I would say very, very early. So the game actually started out in a very different place. It was originally going to be a top-down strategy game, which was kind of a very different direction. Yeah, I don't know if you were even there, Nabil, when we were kind of playing with this and talking about it.
I saw it. I've seen it before.
Yeah, it was in the very early days, and it was really about resource management, about this idea of still painting with light, but the balance between light and shadow, and using that almost as a resource. And so it was going kind of in a very different direction, and we realized that to create the experience that we really wanted to create, it had to be something that was more personal. And so the first step was kind of taking the camera and moving it from a top-down perspective to over the shoulder, so you felt a little bit closer to the world and to the characters and to the environment. And I think that's when we really started talking with Nabil and kind of bringing him on the project and discovering what the sounds would be like and what the music would be like.
Yeah, one of the first things they said to me was we wanted to sound like Journey. And that's pretty terrifying for a 19-year-old who doesn't know how to write orchestral music.
Oh, come on. It's no problem.
So.
Yeah, hey Nabil, if you got some spare time, can you make like one of the Masterclass soundtracks? You know, just make it sort of sound like Austin Wintry,
oh,
if that's okay. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Journey is a massive inspiration for any aesthetic-driven game, whether you're going for the visual arts or the audio arts. So what did you start with, Nabil? Like, what was the early sound of Soul?
I sat down on the computer in FL Studio, and I loaded up some instruments like Omnisphere, and some orchestral stuff like strings and flutes, and I just started running these drones. They sort of move through a chord progression really slowly, and on top I was switching through various instruments, just kind of like playing random notes on the keyboard, trying to search for some melodic content, search for some ideas that I could latch onto. And it's kind of an allegory for the game itself, because in this concept track, basically by the end of it I found a melody that I have been using for like the last 3 years in the Soul soundtrack.
Oh, wow.
And so it was sort of like a search in the dark for something, you know, something meaningful.
So we know kind of going in the general idea for the emotional content that we wanted, and really the inspiration I'd say for the game was trying to, when we first conceived it, it was going to be a mobile game, strictly mobile, so only on iOS and Android. And our goal was to create an experience like Journey or like Flower or Abzu or any of these more aesthetic driven experiences, but on phones, and to let players explore this world kind of in the palm of their hands. And so in approaching that, we knew that we wanted to kind of do the exact opposite that a lot of mobile games do, where a lot of mobile games are social, right? You think, you know, Candy Crush and Angry Birds, it's all about interacting kind of asynchronously with other players. So we said, well, what if we created a game that was all about being alone and being kind of lost in this world and not knowing where you're going or what you're doing? And so that's kind of the emotional core that we always had. But I had no idea how to even kind of talk about the sounds that would result in, or the music or the melodies, or how any of that would translate. And so I think just getting those first tracks back, Nabil just did such a great job in communicating those, and we really latched on to some of the melodies that he had come up with, and really thinking about kind of the droning sounds and how we can start really building the atmosphere, because I think that's something that we weren't really certain of. We had this idea for the general feeling that we wanted the game, but we weren't really sure how we were going to communicate that.
Basically, the source of dynamism in the game is the music. The music is the central thing that moves when you're in a level or when you're in some area. It's sort of the informant of what's happening. There's no dialogue, there's no characters, there's no HUD that's telling you the name of this area that you came to. So in that sense, the music is basically taking on almost like the role of the storyteller. In that, you know, when you go around, like in the level we had at Magfest, there's you're in this place called Mountain City. It's basically a giant basin, and you can be running around in Mountain City for like 30 minutes. I think some people played it for like an hour. So the music is this constantly evolving, sort of pulsating. I call it the Gaia, which is sort of the personification of the Earth around. It's kind of just like this noise. There's a lot of like string noise. There's a lot of sort of synthesizer drones and pads. It's kind of like creating the sound of the world.
Did you do everything with synthesizers and virtual instruments, or is anything live on the soundtrack?
So for a while it was all sample libraries and synths, and then last year, actually, I got basically my first ever live music done. I had Laura and Travia record flutes for Mountain City.
Hey, cool.
And then towards the end of last year, beginning of this year, in prep for MAGFest, I had Kristen also do some wind parts. She did bass flute and English horn for Mountain City. And so what that did to the music was it just added this other dimension of expression to it that I didn't really have before.
Yeah.
And I was really happy with how it sounded, because basically there's this part in Mountain City where it opens up with this really somber melody. And then it passes off between different instruments, but then there's this part at 28 seconds in where the English horn comes in and plays it. That's Kristen playing it, and there's kind of like, I don't know, I don't even know how to describe it, and you know, I'm supposed to be the music expert here, but yeah. It's basically, it's almost like the way she played that melody, she directly understood what I was going for. And in the sampled performance, it was so, by comparison, it was very flat, you know, it didn't really, but when Kristen played it, and I wrote this in the sheet music too, I was like, pretend you're sitting in, you know, a giant dark field and you're just playing out into the darkness, right? And she pretty much nailed that. That's exactly what it sounds like when she plays here. I was floored when she sent me the files, and I was like, this fits so well, and you know, I mixed it in with all the reverb and stuff, and it sounds so like huge.
It's a testament to the human touch. You know, it's the thing that people spend millions of dollars trying to replicate.
You know, when they asked me when I was 19 years old to write music like Journey, you know, I didn't really know how to write orchestral music at all. You know, I'd never worked with flutes and violins and violas and stuff. I was mostly like an EDM producer at that point. And, you know, of course you can make, you know, very compelling dramatic music with you know, synthesizers and, you know, electronic music, but I knew that the sound they were going for, that Gossamer Games wanted, it was very much that human, you know, orchestral cinematic sound. And so Soul, you know, is not just valuable to me because it's my first game score, but because it's taught me so much about music in general.
God, that's so cool.
So this is really the first full production that I think any of us have really worked on. Which is pretty ambitious to try and kind of start out with this type of game. And I've always said that I think to make a game like this, it has to come from somewhere personal. And over these past few years, we've all put in a ton of thought into what it is exactly we're making. And I think very recently we discovered that the game is really much closer to our personal experiences than we ever would have thought. For me, I consider Soul almost an allegory for the artistic and creative journey that we've all gone through in creating this game. We started coming into this and we had no idea how to make games. We had no idea kind of what we wanted to do as artists or creators, and didn't really know how to get started or where to go. And I actually think that kind of manifests itself in the game, because we drop you in and we don't tell you where to go or what to do or anything like that. And so I think in some way, the game we're creating is almost a little bit of an allegory, or at least drawing a lot of inspiration from a lot of the emotions that we felt in kind of our journey as creators. And I think the game has it's kind of somber in that you're alone and you're kind of going at it by yourself. But I think by the end, there's a lot of positivity and a lot of hope. And I think that's kind of where we all are right now as creators as well.
That's super well said. It's something that I've really learned to appreciate from abstract music. It's designed in a sort of abstract way so anyone can step in and lay down their own experience into it.
Right.
It's actually manifested in how I approach the music. Specifically in Mountain City also, it's constructed in a way where nothing changes overtly to communicate action.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's constantly changing. It's shifting harmonies, it's shifting timbres, different instruments are being passed around, but it's always keeping the same mood. And the neat thing about this that most people haven't caught on to is that this is music is completely uninteractive so far. It's just one loop. It's just playing over and over again.
Right.
But people, when they play this game, they come up to me and they're like, this music interactivity is amazing. How did you do it? Because there's subtle changes in everything, it always feels like it's scoring what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
But no one plays this game the same way, you know, twice. You know, you don't, because Mountain City is an open-ended level, right? You can go about it in any order you want. You know, it's not a linear progression. So, you know, you don't play Mountain City the same way twice. And so the music scores what you're doing, like, different events to the same musical events. So in that way, every time a person plays the game, the music responds to them differently than, you know, another person playing the game. And that's something I'm really proud of in trying to figure out that approach.
And Tom, when you guys are thinking about level design, mm-hmm. are you trying to do something similar in the sense where the players can go anywhere they want, but they always feel like they're going in the right direction?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting challenge because we really wanted to use exploration as kind of the main gameplay mechanic. So often exploration in a game is the thing that you do in between, and it's almost like filler, right? It's mm-hmm. something you're kind yeah. of working towards to hit the big climax. And we really wanted to make exploration the most satisfying thing, the big mechanic of the game. And so it's been really interesting designing environments around that, because there's that fine line between when players are getting frustrated because they're lost and the satisfaction and kind of the emotional content that we want of being lost and not knowing exactly where to go or what to do. And I don't think we really settled on anything that felt really good until we had that music that was really kind of establishing the tempo of the game and the frequency of when things should be happening and triggering. I can't really overstate how much of an impact Nebula's had on the story, the narrative direction of the game. Because for a very long time, I'm sure it was a little bit frustrating for Nebula, the game didn't really have a story at all. There mm-hmm. was really no narrative direction, because again, I think for us it was, the big focus was trying to capture a certain feeling or a certain emotion through the atmosphere. And so we were, again, much less concerned with the characters and kind of the strict lore, and more about just kind of capturing a certain feeling. And so going through it, we, for the longest time, didn't really have any idea what is the history of this world? What happened here? You know, what is this weird ball that you're floating around? and... Yeah, Nabil had a really big part in shaping that narrative, going up to the whiteboard and basically drawing the map for the game and figuring out how we would start kind of channeling the emotional journey of the environments, and definitely the music was a huge part of that as well.
It was very fun for me, but also it wasn't just something I did for fun, it was something I did out of necessity, because it's hard to write music when you don't know what you're writing music for.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The thing is, if you just want a cool aesthetic, you know, it's very easy to paint music, you know, just paint colors, basically, and sort of create an atmosphere. But if you want to create a narrative direction, if you want to create drama, that requires something more continuous that runs through everything. And that was sort of the murky thing that was missing from Soul when I came on. And so basically I was like, you know, I study music and how it's used in movies and TV shows and whatever. And, mm-hmm. you know, this is something that I kind of connect the dots with when I analyze all this stuff. And that's something that's missing here. And I want to provide, you know, some feedback to sort of try and make that something I can latch onto. And so that's when I started trying to participate in the story writing and stuff. And yeah. I'm really happy that they, you know, they ran with my ideas and, you know, it sort of morphed into its own thing now. And so now I can just sit back and ask, you know, what's going on. And, you know, they just tell me and, you know, I can work that into the narrative concept and right. the drama and the theme writing and all that.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing. Like going back to the very beginning of the interview, Tom, when you were saying that the creation process of the game was a metaphor for the game itself.
Yeah.
That's like been all over this conversation. It's amazing how many ways you can link that together.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, where can people learn a little more about the game if they want to check it out and someday purchase it for themselves?
Yeah, definitely. So we are currently developing the game for Steam, so on Windows and Mac. And also, it will be coming eventually to iOS and Android, and we just announced that it will be coming to Xbox One later this year. So, still in development again, but we are hard at work finishing it up. Don't have an exact release date pinned down just yet, but if you are interested in learning more and kind of seeing more about the game, we actually did a successful Kickstarter earlier last summer, and that has a ton of information about the game. Has kind of samples from the soundtrack. There's actually a link to a demo on itch.io, and there we actually have the game up for pre-order, so you can download the demo. If you like what you see, like what you play, you can give that a pre-order, and you'd get a Steam key upon release as well. And just following us on Twitter, Gossamer Games, Facebook, you can find us just searching Gossamer Games.
Thanks so much, Tom and Nabil. Guys, this was so much fun. I learned a ton about this game.
Absolutely, yeah.
But anyway, guys, thanks again. And now we are going to head back to the rest of the show.
Welcome to The Big Ones, a look at popular game music and what makes it so loved. Today is all about possibly the biggest one, The Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time. Few games get the amount of love and praise that Ocarina of Time gets. Since its release in 1998, the game has become legendary. It was the first 3D Zelda and had a sense of scope and scale unlike most games of that time, and especially for the Nintendo 64. And similar to Super Mario 64, the modern 3D Zeldas are still incredibly similar to this one in terms of gameplay, with Breath of the Wild being a notable exception. The future entries in this series pull from this game more than any other in basically every facet. But today is all about arguably the biggest aspect, the music. Ocarina of Time was composed by legendary Nintendo composer Koji Kondo, and it's the last game that he composed entirely by himself. And from the interviews I've read, it seems like he had a lot of freedom regarding the score. Many of the tracks in this game originate from the previous console Zelda, A Link to the Past, including Zelda's Lullaby, The Great Fairy Fountain, Ganon's Theme, and Kakariko Village. All these renditions are great, Zelda's Lullaby really comes into its own in Ocarina, but there's so much amazing music in the game that I'm going to focus just on the original tracks today. My favorite melody introduced in this game is probably the Temple of Time, or maybe Song of Time. In In the Temple of Time itself, it's played with a male vocal synth, simulating a Gregorian chant. This is a monophonic choral style, which means that there's no harmony. Everyone in the ensemble is singing the same pitch. The name comes from the Gregorian monks, and composers use this style today to evoke something that's spiritual or ancient, and the Temple of Time is both. The main focus of the game is on the magical Ocarina of Time. An ocarina is an ancient instrument that you simply blow into and put your fingers in different holes to play. It usually looks kind of like a potato, but can come in all shapes and sizes. In the game, the ocarina has 5 notes, according to the C buttons and A button, and there are 12 different songs you can play on it that do different things. You can play more than these 5 notes by pushing the control stick in different directions, but the primary notes are D, F, A, B, and D an octave higher. I won't go through all the ocarina songs, but I want to call out Bolero of Fire. Bolero of Fire is reminiscent of Ravel's Bolero, both in style and obviously name. The developers of the original Legend of Zelda wanted to have Ravel's Bolero be the song that introduces the player to the game, but they found out that the copyright hadn't expired on the song yet, so Koji Kondo cranked out an arrangement of the main theme that we all know and love in a single day. And speaking of the main theme, it's noticeably absent from Ocarina of Time. It's slightly referenced in the Hyrule Field music, but you never hear the full original theme in Ocarina of Time. Something I feel a lot of people forget in this game is that a lot of the music is ambient and kind of ethereal. All of the dungeons have this intense and kind of strange sounding music to emphasize the caverns you're exploring. My favorite of these is Inside the Great Deku Tree, the Forest Temple, and the Spirit Temple. Inside the Great Deku Tree has a slow buildup with lots of notes but no real melody. It's kind of hollow-sounding, which provides the perfect background as you're exploring the inside of an ancient tree. The Forest Temple has this constant, kind of shaking drum sound. I'm not even sure what it's supposed to be, but I like it. And Spirit Temple has this really 80s sounding synth, and I'm a sucker for that kind of sound. Plus, it sounds deserty and Arabic without resorting to a lot of cliches Desert Worlds tend to fall back on. The Fire Temple theme is interesting. There's actually 2 versions of it, one that has this kind of cool chanting in the background, and a replacement version for later's edition of the game. Turns out that this cool chanting is actually an Islamic prayer, and since Nintendo tries to avoid any kind of reference to religion in its games when releasing in the West, they removed it from later versions. Later version has a more generic vocal synth, and the drums drop out in the middle of the song. I prefer the original version, but that's more for the constant drums in the vocal sample. And there's so much amazing music that I haven't touched on. A whole episode could be devoted to how Zelda's lullaby gets used in the game. I could focus on each of the warp song names and describe what a minuet or a requiem are. I could talk about the many shop and town themes and how great Lon Lon Ranch is. and I could talk about how poorly the virtual instruments have held up. But Ocarina of Time is really that amazing. And while it's not my favorite Zelda, it's certainly the most influential one, and one of the most influential games ever. And it would be nothing without the music. This game is why many people got into game music to begin with, and some of the first times I looked up remixed video game music, I was trying to find Ocarina of Time songs. One of the first songs I learned to play on guitar was Gerudo Valley, so it seems a fitting end, at least for a while, to the big ones. Thank you so much for listening, and listen well.
Playlist is a weekly collection of listener-submitted recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is ambient music.
The Crystal Key is Broken, originally from Donkey Kong Country 3, remixed by Theophany and submitted by Black Doom.
The Owl and the Penguin, from Elemental, and submitted by Stalky. Thank you.
Moog City from Minecraft Volume Alpha and submitted by Patchpin.
Forest Temple, from The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time and submitted by Luigi. The Theme, from Tangle Deep and submitted by Tamias222.
Thank you.
the main theme from Mass Effect Andromeda and submitted by Yorito.
Potato-S, Lament, from Portal 2, and submitted by Jack.
Thank you.
Ghosts of the Past, from Thomas Was Alone and submitted by Planarian Hugger.
Tanaris, Knight, from World of Warcraft and submitted by Sothen.
Lost Ship, from FTL and submitted by Joseph G.
Thank you.
What a show, what a show. Next week's playlist is credits music. You know, for endings. To submit your suggestions, hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast. Email us at podcast@ocremix.org or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom.
Goodbyes are a part of time, a part of moving forward, but ways are lost ahead. They're all blue and blurred. Equally timeless are the adventures of Maui Mallard, a trop. The things I have to say. Equally timeless are the.